everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today for another opportunity to have a great conversation, and you are really going to be so thrilled that you have tuned in today because I have such a special guest who will be sharing amazing information for us. For those of you who may be listening for the first time, hello, welcome. I hope you'll be returning again and again. This show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And to that end, I have some very special people who are always coming onto the show and sharing leading-edge information that I know makes a huge difference. So again, thank you for joining me, and stay tuned because we have such such a very special guest. So you're probably wondering who that special guest is, so I'm going to let you get past your suspense, and I'll share with you. We are calling today Dr. Ole Johansson all the way from Sweden, and it's such a pleasure to have Dr. Ole Johansson on the show. Let me just share a little bit about him. Dr. Johansson, associate professor at the Karolinska Institute, although he retired in November 2017, he's still active. And also he's with the Department of Neuroscience and head of the Experimental Dermatology Unit, has a long background in the neurosciences, and has co-authored up to the presentation of his doctoral thesis 143 original papers, reviews, book chapters, and conference abstracts, has participated in more than 300 congresses, symposia, and meetings as an invited speaker, and with free contributions, and as an invited observer at an additional 200. His studies have been widely recognized in the public media, including newspapers, radio, and TV, as well as the internet, both nationally as well as internationally, and he is a regular interview guest in magazines, journals, tabloids, and newspapers, as well as in the radio shows and TV programs and internet-based news blogs and websites. Dr. Johansson is a world-leading authority in the field of EMF radiation and health effects. Among many achievements, he coined the term screen dermatitis, which later on was developed into the functional impairment electrosensitivity with recognition mainly is due to his work. He is concerned about the health effects of electromagnetic fields on the general population, including memory, concentration, and learning difficulties, neurological damage and cancer, immune system impairments, fertility issues, as well as impacts on other animals, plants, and bacteria. His research group continues to investigate adverse health effects of modern man-made artificial electromagnetic fields as well as the functional impairment electrosensitivity. So this is such an amazing conversation, and I'm so grateful to welcome Dr. Ole Johansson to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm blushing like a schoolboy when you said all of that kind words, you know. And also, no, it's really fantastic. Thank you so much. But you started to say that you have your radio show about what women must know. But yes. This topic of today really concerns women and men, babies, newly borns, unborns, children, teenagers, and elderly, everyone, including also, of course, all other animal species, plants, and bacteria, because everyone is part of this gigantic 24/7 exposure experiment that we call the modern Internet of Things and 5G, 4G, 3G, and whatever.
So I'd like to start by asking you, how did you get into, you know, become so involved, become so aware of the problem so early on? I think you were...
It goes back actually to the end of the 1970s, so your listeners were not even born then, you know. And I was picking up on journals and magazines in Sweden depicting problems in the newly introduced visual display units computer screens and similar in offices, and people then reported skin problems, skin rashes of various types when they were exposed to these gadgets. And I kind of passively followed the discussion in the union magazines and the trade union journals. And then one evening I did something which I should do a lot more, but I actually do very rarely. I listened to a radio program. It was 8 o'clock, I remember, in the evening, and someone had left the radio on in the laboratory, and suddenly I heard a woman from Göteborg, which is a town on the west coast of Sweden, and she was talking about women being placed in front of these computer screens, getting these skin rashes, and she asked for expertise in neurology. And I'm not a clinical neurologist, but a neuroscientist, more a theoretical scientist and doing animal experiments. But I thought, well, close enough. So I called this lady, Kajsa Vedin is her name, and we got together and had a meeting together with a physicist, Yngve Hamnerius, at the Karolinska Institute. They came to me and we sat down and started to talk. And this is in the beginning of the 1980s. And following it, we decided to start various forms of investigations to try to understand why people would get these, at that time, not even named, there was no clinical name or anything on it, you know. And later on, it was developed into what I call then screen dermatitis. And it was further on, as you said in your introduction, turned into the disability electrohypersensitivity.
So, in your research, what is it that was causing this type of dermatitis, which I would imagine to be a rash, would be itching?
Yeah, with pricking pain sometimes, redness of the skin, very much as if you would have been out in the skin sun too long, getting skin problems afterwards. But this was in the mid-winter here in Sweden, no real sunshine at all, and people still got these skin irritations. And we started to take skin biopsies and saw that the skin was highly activated regarding immune system cells as well as other types of cells, which you in parallel would find in other forms of radiation damage. You would have seen the very same pattern if people were subjected, for instance, to X-rays or radioactive rays or ultraviolet light or something like that. But they had just been sitting in front of safe computer screens at their offices, or some of them in their household, and still they got these irritations. And later on, but then we have to jump to around the end of the 1990s, we also did experiments on normal healthy volunteers, and we saw that when we put people in front of similar television screens, household television screens, as well as household computer screens, they got the same kind of skin activation, particularly the so-called mast cells. Mast cells, they are the key cell type for allergies, asthmas, and other oversensitivities. And when people were placed in front of these household gadgets, the mast cells, they definitely were highly activated, and they were moving towards the surface of the skin. And it pointed to that, since we did, you know, blind-coded or double-blind-coded experiments, it was not a matter of illusion or imagination or anything like that. It was a real biophysical reaction to the exposures from these computer screens.
And that was before wireless came in, so it was... It was from those electromagnetic fields emitted from the computers, television screens themselves. This is early days.
And that became also very early our working hypothesis, that this was nothing peculiar in any way. It was just the radiation damage. And the cause, as you say, was from the computer screens and television screens and so on. And then later on, of course, it also developed into wireless exposures, like from wireless internet, cell phones, baby alarms, smart meters, whatever, you know. And that has, as you know, developed very much. And nowadays, electrohypersensitivity probably is the smallest piece of the jigsaw puzzle. Other pieces, as you mentioned before, are reactions in the immune system, effects on fertility, cancer development, and so on.
So can you help us understand what is going on from the exposure to our Wi-Fi devices and these microwave radiation frequencies that are emitted? What is your understanding of how exposure to these frequencies is impacting our health?
Well, you know, I think it's definitely not any form of rocket science. It's not very complicated because the exposures, and they are, of course, invisible to the human eye, but they are colossal. I often say they are biblical or astronomical. People don't understand that when they use a cell phone or a wireless computer or something similar, they are exposed to signals that, compared to the natural background, easily could be a quintillion times higher. That's 1 with 18 zeros after. So the exposures compared to normal natural background are really indeed colossal. And when you add such extreme amounts of energy to any living system, it will react. And if the plants and other animals and bacteria can talk to us, I'm sure they would also report very similar subjective symptoms as the electrohypersensitive people report. And the latter, of course, they function as the classical canary bird in the coal mine. They are telling us that something is not all right. And as I said before, further research has clearly pointed to that everyone is at jeopardy, and maybe at the end, electrohypersensitive people will actually be in a better situation because they don't buy and use wireless computers or cell phones or baby alarms or smart meters or anything like that. They try to reduce the exposure, and they have a withdrawal reaction. And if this exposure we are talking about from all these wireless gadgets, if it's toxic to living cells, then of course the good reaction would be to stay away from it.
So those that are most sensitive already are aware. The rest of us are, you know, like cooking away, but not necessarily. Yeah. Well, it's not that we're not aware. I think the problem often is the fact that people are being affected. They have, and they're getting diabetes, they're getting cancers, they're dealing with infertility issues. They, may find themselves having insomnia, but they haven't connected the dots to understand that what's driving these symptoms and conditions can be exposure to all the Wi-Fi frequencies in their environments.
Oh, that's a brilliant summary, I must say. You should have my chair actually here. You know, you are really the professor. No, that's really brilliant. That's so simple, and it's exactly right to the point. And as you say, they are not connecting the dots. And at the same time, the scientific literature is flooded with publications, each one of them pointing to that you are right. And these enormous exposures will develop into reactions that people don't understand. And they don't have the information, not the knowledge, because not everyone is listening, for instance, to your radio program, and therefore they don't get the knowledge they need. But more and more is happening. And for instance, in about 2 weeks' time, I'm invited to visit the Danish parliament because they have a public hearing about exactly this, what you are talking about. And people are more and more concerned, and more dots are produced, and more connections between the dots are also introduced into the public understanding. So if you call me in 10 or 20 years, I think the situation will be very different. And for instance, 2017 is a real divided in the sense that scientists led by a colleague Tahiri and other scientists, they exposed bacteria to normal electromagnetic signals from cell phones, mobile phones. And not very much happened actually with the bacteria, apart from one small thing, small within quotation marks, I would say, a thing that has made the G20 countries have separate meetings here in Europe. And what I'm talking about is that the bacteria became antibiotic resistant. And, you know, if that would happen, it has been calculated with the development we see now that in 2050, then around 10 million people will die prematurely due to antibiotic resistance. And these figures have not been calculated with the new data from 2017. So maybe in 2050, we are talking not about 10 million, but 100 million or 500 million or whatever. And I'm surprised that not more governments and parliaments like the Danish one are inviting people like myself, because this needs to be discussed openly.
You know, this is such fascinating information. I've been recently listening to some interviews by Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt. Are you aware of Dr. Klinghardt?
Oh, very well indeed, yes.
Yes. So he has been aware of the impact of electromagnetic fields on people's health for a long, long time. In fact, in his practice, he will not even organize and arrange a consultation unless people have become protected from the EMFs, because he believes that he really can't help them if they are dealing with all these devices without protection. But the most recent thing that I learned from him, which just fits in so beautifully with what you were saying, is the impact of electromagnetic frequencies on our microbiome.
Yeah.
And how it's altering the microbiome, how it's creating more pathogens within our microbiome, kind of like making healthy microbes rogue, you know, so they become harmful and dangerous, which fits into the antibiotic resistance model you were talking about, which is, which is terrifying, because if our gut is not healthy, we cannot be healthy. It's the origin of chronic illnesses.
Yeah. No, and it's so fascinating because in the beginning, and now I turn back again to the first half of the 1980s, I remember when I gave public lectures, I wanted to sort of shake the audience a little bit. So I told them that just for the sake of the argument, imagine that nitrogen-binding bacteria of plants will be damaged by all these wireless exposures. And people shook their head and they didn't believe me, you know, and they thought it was a kind of a grim joke. But now, 2018, the grim joke has become, as you say, a reality. We have to understand that every type of living system on planet Earth is at jeopardy. And I'm very honored, for instance, Dietrich Klinghardt often refers to my early research. And he was one of the very first, actually, to listen and understand and both act and react to it. But also, beside him, one has to remember that very few actually paid any attention in the beginning, in the 80s, in the 90s, and so on. But there were some that very early paid an extreme attention to it. And I often call them the major powerful players. And among them, you would find, for instance, the World Health Organization, the radiation protection authorities around the world, of course, the telecom operators and the telecom manufacturers, and all the insurance and reassurance companies. All of them, for many, many years ago, have abandoned ship. They have left the ship and swam away from it because they very early understood that this is something they don't want to be liable for or responsible for. And I remember in 2002, that's 16 years ago, there was a meeting in London, and at it, there were representatives of insurance companies like Lloyd's UK and a small company from Sweden. And there was also reassurance companies like from Switzerland. And all of them said that for them, it was not a question whether there were adverse health effects or not. The only question was who is going to pay for the damages in the future, and they definitely didn't want to pay. And since they are commercial companies, they are not bound by any law to protect us or take the full responsibility. They could just leave it to society. And, you know, I can tell you thousands and thousands of scientific stories and results, and still your listeners may not trust what I say, but you Americans, you have such a beautiful quote, and you often say, when in doubt, always follow the money. And if you follow the money here, then it's clear cut. There is no question mark whatsoever that the exposures are dangerous and will produce huge problems in the future, and the major powerful players don't want to be close to them at all.
Well, we have to acknowledge that the cell phone industry does give $100 million a year in lobbying fees to their people to influence Congress. That's a lot of money,
yes.
A lot of influence, as we know.
Yeah.
You know, you are
Let me just say, from a legal point of view, as our societies are constructed, the companies, they don't do anything illegal. It's perfectly all right to have lobbyists working the Congress and the Senate and so on. But the question is, the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Sweden and so on, would they be able to do more and put pressure in a reversed direction? And tell companies and insurance companies and operators and manufacturers and so on that they have to come up with a safe gadget before we allow this 24/7 whole body exposure.
You know, that would be such a great concept if it was embraced, but you know, I fear that the horse is out of the barn. And
we're
at a
right.
place, you know. I mean, it's too late. What we need to do is get this kind of education awareness, and then start some proactive measures. You know, you're featured in the documentary Generation Zapped, which I have been showing in my community, and I know that there are many people who are now showing the documentary Generation Zapped, which is a pretty compelling and well-done documentary looking at the whole story behind the Wi-Fi world and the effects and impacts on many levels. You know, Well, you know, because you were featured in there, you were one of the experts, and I know that in the segment they showed, you were talking at a conference about electrohypersensitivity. I want to go back to that for a moment, because wasn't Sweden one of the early adapters of all this technology with Ericsson and other companies?
Yes, and Ericsson and other telecom companies have actually used both Sweden and Åland, which is an island between Sweden and Finland, as kind of full-scale laboratories testing new technologies to see from a technical point of view how it works and so on. So Swedes have been exposed for a very, very long time indeed. And but, you know, the first cases of electrohypersensitivity from a sort of formal point of view, they were actually from Norway and from the United States. And historically, and that is, of course, not possible to prove, really, but there are good suspicions that Nikola Tesla, the physicist and inventor, he was probably one of the very first examples of an electrohypersensitive person, and today one of the most famous electrohypersensitive persons is, of course, the former head of the World Health Organization, the former Prime Minister of Norway, a medical doctor, namely Gro Harlem Brundtland, an extremely intelligent woman, and she is still electrohypersensitive, and she has gone public and talked very openly about her problems. And so you see, anyone could be electrohypersensitive, and historically, as I say, when you go backwards, you can see then that already when electricity was kind of introduced on a larger scale at the end of the 19th century, certain persons actually started to claim adverse health effects. And this was further strengthened, for instance, by the introduction of amateur DX radio in the 1940s and 50s. So you said it before, there are dots that needs to be connected. And in Sweden, the connection was made very much due to work from trade unions, but also, of course, from scientists and medical doctors like myself. And the year 2000, then the electrohypersensitivity was formally acknowledged as a functional disability or functional impairment by the Swedish government. And at the same time, also, the subjective symptom was acknowledged by the Nordic Council of Ministers. So the year 2000 was very important.
Right. So people in Sweden who exhibit the symptoms, which I'm going to ask you to go through in a minute, it is considered a disability. They get a pension for it and, yes. Are trying, obviously, to find a way to protect themselves and to reduce the exposure. So, yeah. I mean, in other countries like the United States, it's still not acknowledged as a real condition. I guess there's a lot of fighting going on.
The problem, sorry to interrupt you, but the thing is, and it would be lovely to have your president on the phone as well, to hear what he says, because imagine that an electrohypersensitive Swede decides to go on vacation to the United States. And what should you then do? And just to get sort of an image of it, in parallel, there is another Swede, and he or she is sitting due to a movement disorder in a wheelchair. And I guess when they arrive at JFK in New York, for instance, the person in the wheelchair is not stripped of the wheelchair, quite the opposite. The personnel at the airport would rush and help the person with the wheelchair. And from a formal legal point of view, the person with electrohypersensitivity has actually the exact same status. They are both protected by the United Nations Special Human Rights Act for people with functional impairments. But as you say, Instead of helping the electrohypersensitive person, some countries, maybe United States, they would start a lengthy discussion, which is non-productive, instead of just helping immediately. And that's maybe the good side to be a Swede, that here you can get to your municipality and ask for support. The handicap organization with electrohypersensitivity, they get a governmental subsidy and so on. And right. That needs to be expanded also to other countries, including, of course, United States.
What are some of the symptoms of electrohypersensitivity?
Well, classically, if you go back to before cell phones and similar wireless gadgets, then 9 out of 10 would develop their electrohypersensitivity in front of a computer screen or something similar. And the first symptoms would be from skin, eyes, sometimes from the oral mucosa, and then later on it builds to symptoms from your heart, breathing, etc. And also at the same time, more and more gadgets come into the situation. And of course, with the introduction of wireless cell phones, then more and more people also had their first initial reactions using these microwave-based technologies. And then around 7 out of 10 first developed their problems with computer screens, and 3 out of 10 with cell phones and similar smaller gadgets. But the symptoms are very much the same. And from the skin, you have skin rashes, irritations, pricking pain. You can have various forms of itching and whatever. So there are quite a number of different reactions. And as I said before, it's exactly the same what you would get if you stay out in the sun for too long time. So it's a sunburn type reaction.
I have several friends who are very electrosensitive. It's really hard for them to be in any environment that has Wi-Fi or a lot of phones. I recently was showing the documentary Generation Zapped in a public library, new public library here. And there was a person who came who was dressed from head to foot. I mean, he had gloves. He looked like he had a snowsuit on. He was covered up, had a hat. It was just his face. And I was like, I didn't quite know who this person was at first. And then it turns out he's an extremely electrosensitive man. And he has to get totally covered up with all the gear that is, you know, I guess has the silver threads. You know, there's material, their hats or clothing you can wear to reduce exposure. But he had some devices with him that measured the frequencies. Now, he was telling me anything over 3.4 megawatts can be harmful to the body. Okay? And he measured the room, the brand new auditorium, at 14,000. So, you know, here we are sitting in this auditorium talking about the dangers of Wi-Fi and electrohypersensitivity, and we're in an environment that is having, serious deleterious effects on our health, and we're all, you know, unaware, except those in the room that were electrohypersensitive who had to leave after a while because it was just too overwhelming for them to be in that field.
Now, as I said before, you know, if you measure various types of frequencies and so on, the general outcome is that the exposures, being invisible in a room, of course, as I said before, they are still biblical, they are colossal, you know. I mean, the numbers we are talking about are just astronomic. And so it's actually more surprising in a sense that not more people react immediately. And it's interesting that you mentioned that you had a meeting in a room, because such a room could, for instance, be a room in a school with small children. And people are not aware of that the World Health Organization in Switzerland has classified these radio frequent electromagnetic fields as possibly carcinogenic, together with so-called power frequency magnetic fields as also possibly carcinogenic. Both of them are coming from, for instance, a cell phone. And this classification was done in a class called 2B. And in it, you find things like DDT, lead, formaldehyde, petrol and diesel exhausts, welding smoke, and so on. And when I ask parents, would it be all right to put your child in a room filled with, for instance, petrol and diesel exhaust or welding smoke? They just say, no way. And then I say, actually, you are, but the welding smoke, in quotation marks, is microwave exposures classified in the same possible carcinogenic class 2B. And then people, they look in dismay at me and say, why have not anyone told us this before?
Right.
And the classifications we are talking about, they go back to 2001 and 2011. So they are not brand new. And people just don't know this. And many parents, as well as teachers, they get very, very angry when I tell them this, not at me, but at the health authorities, at the government, at the parliament, who hasn't informed all parents and teachers and so on in the society about these hazards.
You know, I've been following this and writing about this problem for over 12 years, mm-hmm. as well, since I became aware of it. And, I call the exposure to these electromagnetic frequencies and our Wi-Fi world the most dangerous public health disaster that public health crisis, actually, that no one knows about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one is aware.
Like
we're oblivious.
That. Yeah, I very much like that. But at the same time, of course, I hope that you are wrong. Because if you are right, and if I'm right, then I even more understand why, for instance, the insurance companies have abandoned the ship.
Exactly, because if you're dealing with a frequency, and we are frequency beings, so we are so sensitive to frequencies, and these microwave radiation frequencies are man-made frequencies that we never evolved with. So if they're affecting our physiology, our biochemistry, if they're affecting the bacteria in our own bodies and the plants, if they're affecting our animals, our bees, we are really at great risk for our well-being, and yet most people just don't get it. They're just not informed. They don't have access to the information, except people who are listening to the shows, who are reading, because there's no, I looked at some statistics, and it explains it all, and that is that 70% of studies done on this technology by independent scientists showed 70%, their results showed a 70% association with serious effects. And those studies that were done by the cell phone industry showed 70% of their studies showed no harmful effects. So you see the bias right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious bias of,
like
so many other issues. So can you just talk a little bit about what's happening with 5G? Because this is a whole new level of bandwidth coming in. And with your expertise with dermatology, there is a lot of concern when we're exposed to these higher frequencies that, and this extended bandwidth that is now being introduced through this 5G system. I'm sure you have a few things to say about that, Ole.
Well, I mean, the 5G and its cousin, the Internet of Things, will of course mean that the exposure levels as well as the time you are exposed will increase dramatically. And at every meeting where I have representatives of the commercial side of this, I always ask them for the documentation done by independent academic scientists, as well as replications of the same, clearly showing that their gadgets or the new bandwidths are completely safe. And so far, I have never received a single sentence, not even a word about safety. I think it's a very scary situation. People are claiming that the Internet of Things and the 5G will further revolutionize our lives, but they don't have any documentation showing that it's safe for children, for teenagers, for adults, or for elderly, or for other animals, or for plants, or bacteria. And that's scary. But on the good side, you know, one shouldn't forget that countries around our lovely planet are beginning to react. For instance, bans, especially in schools, have come effectively into place in, for instance, France, in Nigeria and Africa. That was 2012. The Solomon Islands, they called for cell phones to be banned in their schools. Uganda in Africa banned phones in schools in 2013. And that was 1 year after Malaysia reaffirmed its own similar ban. And you have parts, prefectures that they are called in Japan, where they try to at least diminish the exposures as much as possible. And you see similar actions in Indonesia and Cyprus here in Europe, for instance. But what I feel is that I constantly lack the same adult responsibility taking from, for instance, Sweden. Right. We are, famous for putting our children into colorful protective vests and helmets and whatever. But at the same time, we expose our children 24/7, wherever they are, to something that the World Health Organization has cancer classified and formally even left completely from a liability point of view. And I'm surprised that Swedish authorities and parliament and government and prime minister and so on, that they don't do anything. Because after all, you said before that the general public, they don't have all the information and so on. And I agree, certainly I agree to that. But at the same time, as a consumer, I shouldn't have to have the responsibility to know everything about everything. Instead, when I go into a food shop, for instance, I should have the feeling of safety and knowing that all dangerous things have been removed from the shelves. As well as if I go into a 5G store, I should know that the 5G is safe. And I could tell all your listeners, it's definitely not.
It's a scary situation. I'll tell you my take on this. Because in the United States, and this was clearly explained in Generations Act, and I just emphasized it when I had little sessions afterwards. So in the United States, there's a lot, there are groups that are really concerned, people speaking out about the health effects and all the research coming out, like the National Toxicology Program, which showed, and they're a very well-designed study, increased risk of brain tumors and even tumors to the heart. But the fact of the matter is that the auspices for the rollout of any form of cell phone technology, the installation of cell phone towers, the 5G situation, anything related to the telecommunications industry is under the auspices of the FCC, the Federal Commerce Commission, which only is concerned with commerce and fair trade. It's not their mandate to be concerned about health. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Association, is not involved in any way with the exposure of EMFs. The FDA is not involved. All of the powers to regulate this technology was put into the hands of the FCC, which means There is no one, Ali. There is no agency in the United States. There is no government body that actually is looking after the health effects from this technology. None. Mm-hmm. No one. So if that is the case, if that's true, and I stand to be corrected if, you know, there's other evidence otherwise, we're left on our own. We are left on our own to get educated. We're left on our own to find strategies that will protect us and our family and, you know, seek out the best options, be it, you know, patented technologies that reduce the impact of harm. I work with some technologies. We need to work with targeted nutrition, supplementation. We need to, you know, reduce exposure of devices in our homes, but we're left to our own devices. I don't know what the solution is to stop this universal trend. I mean, when they put those 12,000 satellites in the air that, you know, in low orbit that will be transmitting 5G throughout the entire planet, it doesn't matter if you have cell phones banned in schools or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What is your solution? Give us some positive information.
Summary, you know, and the situation is unfortunately very much the same all around the world. And to your listeners, I would like to start to say that do not believe that mobile phones, iPads, iPhones, Wi-Fi, 5G, Internet of Things are safe. They are not. And the major players, like the insurance and reassurance companies, the World Health Organization and so on, in our society, they know it. And these gadgets, they interfere with normal brain functional learning and memory, fertility, cancer risks, and have been shown to be genotoxic. They shatter the DNA in cells. And all of this can be found in so-called peer-reviewed scientific journals. But as you pointed out before, until now has not really been in the public domain. But thanks to radio programs like your own, more and more information is leaking out. And I think the authority in quotation mark that we have to lean towards and trust is the intelligence of the general public, of the citizens. And they have to stand up and say, enough is enough, really. And also put pressure on the companies to come forward with what I have coined human and environmental friendly technology. And I could tell your listeners that there are actually already companies, not in the United States, but in other countries, that are very keen on trying to solve this puzzle and come up with other types of information solutions and gadgets. But maybe I just saw a few days ago a cartoon with a lot of hens that were talking with each other. And the hens, they said to each other, you know, that how shall we get rid of all these humans? And then one of the chickens says, give them Wi-Fi, give them Wi-Fi.
We're laughing, but we're crying. I know. So are there any positive, practical action steps that you have to help people recover their health, to support them in recovering their health? What do you advise people personally if they can start implementing?
Both for electro-hypersensitive persons and also for normal healthy volunteers. Of course, to get rid of all the gadgets and reduce the exposure as much as possible, that's a very important step. And I see, for instance, here in Sweden, that so-called retreats are becoming more and more popular. And they advertise that the retreat is not only silent, but it's cell phone free, it's Wi-Fi free and so on. So it's type of a new modern retreat people are paying quite a lot of money actually to attend. But that's only for a few weeks. And in the meantime, of course, you need to get rid of all the gadgets, get rid of the exposures. Shielding and distance are two key words here. But having said that, just a few days ago, I saw yet a new publication from scientists clearly demonstrating DNA shattering from so-called base stations, from the antennas. So even if you don't have a mobile phone or a wireless computer, you are, of course, still exposed. And with the exposure levels being so dramatically high, the impact on your cells and molecules seems to be too much. And every evening I go down on my knees and pray to God that people like you and myself, that we are wrong, and that all the publications, and we are talking about, 25, 30,000 of scientific papers, that they all are wrong. But of course they are not. And in the meantime, I beg to commercial entities, to entrepreneurs and companies to try to come up with solutions and to get rid of all these exposures, because as we said before, even if we only concentrate on human beings in this program, we shouldn't forget about all the other animals. You mentioned, for instance, pollinating insects, where the reduction here in Europe is just overwhelming. The latest report is from Germany, where more than 75% of all the pollinating insects just are gone, you know. So soon everything will be gone, because without the pollinating insects like bees and so on, we cannot survive. We will not get apples and whatever, you know. And so the bell certainly is, it's ringing. It's an alarm.
So as a naturopathic doctor who has been investigating what we can do to help our bodies, if we're just dealing with the effect on our physical self, what are some of the things? I find electrosensitive people are they tend to be the highly sensitive ones. Maybe they've had more traumas. Maybe they have more stress in their life. There's something that makes them vulnerable. If we see these fields as toxins, then it's like a tipping point for these people. So some of the things that I've been looking into, and I'll just share with you in the audience today, one of the effects from exposure to electromagnetic fields is the production of high amounts of free radicals, oxidative stress, that alters the biochemistry. And one of them is a very dangerous free radical called peroxynitrite. There is a one of the things that neutralizes that is a product called molecular hydrogen, and I have found it as a tablet, and it's a very powerful form of quenching free radicals. Specifically, it goes after these ones created under the stress of electromagnetic frequencies. So it's something that I take. There's hydrogen water, but I like it as an effervescent tablet that you can put into any liquid, and it'll give you high amounts of hydrogen, which is able to go in and repair the damage and help protect. So that's number one. From Dr. Klinkhart, what he is using is a very special form of probiotic called Sporebiotics, which I have recently been introduced to, and just recently did a show on them with one of the experts. And these are very special forms of microorganisms that help to go in and repair the gut, help to bring these pathogens back into harmony in the community. And I know that Dr. Klinkhart is now using Sporebiotics as a fundamental part of his protocol. So that seems to be another piece that can help people. They say that low levels of magnesium can contribute to some of the biochemical changes that happens on a cellular level. So making sure you keep your magnesium levels up. And people obviously need to get healthy. We need to be inspired, get our sleep, get off of our junk food, reduce exposure to toxins, everything that's going to lessen the toxic load on our body while we're eating well and doing targeted nutrition can help.
That's a very important what you say now, and it has impacts on more or less every disease, every type of impairment, every type of problem that you should get rid of all toxins, smoking, alcohol, drugs, and so on. And you should eat very well, and you should get rid of all junk food, sugar, salt, etc. And it's extremely important to do that, and also to exercise, to have a good fitness of your body in general. The physical stamina should be at the highest possible level. And then, of course, you are prepared to tackle various forms of exposures. But at the same time, I have to repeat that, unfortunately, the type of exposures we are talking about now, they will still have impacts on your body. So you need to also shield and or distance yourself. And maybe some of your listeners feel that, well, I cannot live without my cell phone or my wireless iPad. But remember that people have lived without such. And for instance, William Shakespeare and Albert Einstein, they didn't have these things, and they are still unsurpassed in brilliance. So you shouldn't be afraid to let go of all these gadgets and instead start living.
Well, it's a very huge topic. It's very frightening when you really start delving into this issue, just how pervasive the effects are, how we have become so reckless in our embracing of these technologies without any safety testing being done at all. And this is why we're having these conversations and encouraging people to become aware, pay attention, and be proactive and share the information. I hope when my listeners receive the archive of our interview, they'll be sending it out far and wide, because I do believe it's up to us. I think it's a grassroots movement at this point. I mean, I hope when you speak at the Danish Parliament, that something positive will come out and the Danish government will take some actions. But I'm going to tell you, it sure ain't happening here. So
Well, you
we're up
need
to,
to, yeah, but I mean, as you say, the grassroots movement, they need, and United States, you are so famous for all the grassroots movement in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and
Ole,
so
I'm
on. I
going to
mean,
have
you've
to.
really done a
I'm going to have
wonderful
to.
job. It's time to get up and do it again, you know.
And I'm going to have to say goodbye because the music is playing. Thank you so much for being with
Well,
us.
thank you.
You're
Thank you
such a
so much
treasure.
indeed.
Thank you so
Thank you.
much. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. See you next week. Bye for now.
No.